Hello, I'm Lucas Kitchen, and today we're going to talk about music. For quite a while, I have been working on an album, and I released it last year, and I have yet to share any of those songs with you or to talk about the story behind the songs. And so what I thought I would do over 10 episodes is talk about the songs that I've published. I wrote all the songs, and they're all meaningful to me, different levels of meaningfulness in each song, but they all have had an interesting journey, and I think it would be worth talking about. So what I want to do is I want to start by reading the lyrics. Then I want to talk to you about the story behind the song, how it came about. And then at the end of the episode, I'm going to play the song for you, and hopefully it will be maximally meaningful to you by then, because I will have talked about it for a while. So here are the lyrics. This is called The Deep. I saw a fish and fell right in. Overboard, now I'm drowning. You hopped the rail and rescued me, and now I see. Another splash, he's drowning too. You dive back in to rescue. But your help he didn't want, and now he's gone. They don't want you, but they need you. They don't want you, but they need you. In violent surf, the fears will rise. So they hide their frightened eyes. The tide sprays all around, and darkness drowns. You're the one who walks along on the waves that are so strong. And you're the one who calls to me, come and see. They don't want you, but they need you. They don't want you, but they need you. What drowning man could slap the hand of a saving friend and choose to stay as he fights the waves? What sinking man could pretend that he can stand against the waves as he drifts away? They don't want you, but they need you. They don't want you, but they need you. So this song took a long path, actually. A number of years ago, in the ministry, I have a writing and media producing ministry. And in that ministry, we had a particular branch for a while. And I guess it still exists in kind of a archive form. But we called it Questions from Atheists. And to this day, some of the media that we made in that branch of the ministry has been seen by more than anything else we've done. Now, we have a few things that are inching up on it, but as far as like sheer number of views, we had millions of views on some of our Questions from Atheist stuff. And I did not intend to be an apologist, you know? I didn't intend to... I like teaching the Bible. I like going through scripture. It's just, there's something about it that caught me from a young age, and, you know, basically been doing it most of my life. So I didn't envision myself being an apologist, but I have always found it kind of interesting. I just don't think apologetics is like all that effective if it's argumentative based. I think it could be effective if it's like Jesus first. A Jesus first focus, where it's not, we're not gonna argue about philosophy, we're gonna talk about Jesus. I think talking about Jesus is always valuable. So anyway, we had this branch of the ministry called Questions from Atheists, and it found quite a bit of success. And on a few of the videos that went viral, we had one that went massively viral, millions of views, and then we had a string of them that did tens of thousands of views. I don't know how many, maybe 15 videos or something like that. So over maybe a year or so, we had just an incredible reach with this ministry. But I always monitored the comment section, because I felt like you can get a sense of what people are thinking by what they comment, you know? And so I was just, I don't know what it is. I was saddened by the types of things that I saw in the comment section, not from believers, but from unbelievers. Just like the hardness of heart and the bitterness and the anger that some were experiencing is just so, I don't know, so sad. And in that time, I would wake up pretty much every day for quite a while with someone cussing me out on a comment. And I'm okay with that. That was not a big deal to me. I would kind of laugh it off because they weren't the center of my world. They were just people that disagreed, and I understood that, and they're frustrated and they're venting, and sometimes we need to let people vent. But I got this feeling around that time that there's just people that refuse to believe, that refuse to approach God with, you know, kind of like an open heart and an open mind. And it just made me sad. It made me really, it made me doubt that there was any way to reach those people. And so at first I wondered, should I try to answer all of these comments that I'm getting, you know, because I was getting like hundreds of comments a day for a little while. And I reached out to a friend who's a Bible teacher, is really, you know, really intelligent guy. And he pointed me to Proverbs chapter 9 and said, you know, Proverbs chapter 9 gives you kind of a permission to not answer a scoffer. So if you can determine that folks are scoffers, then, you know, you're within biblical boundaries to not answer them if you feel like you need to. And that simultaneously did two things. I mean, one, it kind of took the burden off. It's like, oh, okay, well, that makes it easier if I just don't have to answer them. But it also felt like I was just kind of consigning them to the outer darkness in my heart, you know? Like, I want to convince people that they should give Jesus a real look, you know, and give him a shot. And so there's this weird dichotomy in me, you know, that I want to give my energy and my attention to the people that are most likely to continue in discipleship. You know, those who are most eager to grow, that's who should get our energy. But at the same time, there's these people who many have been hurt or in a lot of cases had fallen into sin while they were believers, and they weren't shepherded well. I actually am convinced that is the case, in a lot of cases. That's what happens, is someone who's a believer falls into sin, and then they've kind of shunned, or they're kind of just put on the outside, and then as kind of like a reciprocal rejection, person begins to move towards secularization and then atheism. It's just a mess, you know, it's just a mess. And that's not to say that there aren't any true atheists out there who just never believed. That's kind of a different category. But I just think many of the atheists actually are stray-gone believers, you know, believers who have kind of gone astray. And I don't know, it's heavy. It's a heavy thing. And so this song came out of all that. I didn't write it at that time. It came later. And what's interesting about the song is the original version was really on the nose. It wasn't this kind of like ocean themed metaphor. It was just kind of on the nose. But I think when the song started to change was with this part, what drowning man could slap the hand of a saving friend and choose to stay as he fights the waves? And I started to think, oh, that's a good analogy. Like for someone who's drowning, how ridiculous would it be to say, like, no, I got it, but, you know, they're in this violent surf, you know? And so I think from there, I kind of started to build outward. And in the original version, that was the hook. That was the chorus. That was like the repeated part. But for whatever reason, later, that started to feel more like the bridge, because what I had is I had this bridge that was, they don't want you, but they need you. They don't want you, but they need you. And honestly, I had just kind of tagged it on to have a bridge kind of as a placeholder. But then I realized that's actually that's the catchier part. You know, they don't want you, but they need you. Just repeats. It's easy to sing. And so at some point when I was putting this song together, I'd recorded all of it, actually recorded the song two or three times in different versions. I had hired a singer at some point to sing it, because I thought maybe I would produce it with a different, you know, with different vocals. Because my vocals have always been, you know, a little lacking. Oh, okay, but, you know, not perfect, obviously. And so I kind of thought, well, I could hire like a pro. And so in that phase, I had it in that format where this drowning man concept was the chorus. But then as I started to produce this album that I released last year, I decided I want to sing these songs. I'm not the best singer in the world, but I wrote them and they're meaningful to me. And I noticed that when I would hire other singers, suddenly I wasn't as passionate about it, you know? So as I was working on it, you know, I'd play it on the piano pretty often in the house. And I asked my wife, Krista, at some point, hey, do you think this other part should be the hook? She's musical. She's savvy. Asked her, do you think this other part should be the hook? Should that be the chorus? And she said, oh yeah, definitely. I was like, oh, okay. Like really clear to her. And so then I just swapped them around. And I think it works better because the music, the arrangement on the bridge now it's a little bit more complex, not super complex, but it's not as simple, you know. And a lot of times a catchy hook, you know, you want something simple. And so then I had a version that was, again, it was still pretty on the nose for the verses. And it was metaphorical, but it was kind of on the nose. It was, and then I thought, you know, I want this to feel more like a story. And I think pretty much any time you take something that feels a little boring and you say, how do I turn this into a story? I think it's always going to be an improvement. And so the line hit me, I saw a fish and fell right in. And that became the first line of the song. And I thought that works. That feels better because it feels like it's setting up the listener for the story that's to come, you know. So I saw a fish and fell right in overboard. Now I'm drowning. Well, now you have the visual. You know, the visual is that, like, okay, this is a person that's on a boat and he's in the water. And then you, the person that the singer is talking to, you hopped the rail and rescued me. And so I liked this idea that this song is like it's a conversation between a believer and the Savior, but it's overheard by others, you know. And so so then the second stanza of the first verse, another splash, he's drowning too. You dive back in to rescue, but your help he didn't want, and now he's gone. That's the feeling I had with, you know, with working with, or, you know, trying to reach out to atheists, was like, man, you guys are drowning and you're mad at me for trying to imply that you might need a life preserver, you know, that you not, might need some help. And so it was, so it evoked, it's very evocative to me. I don't know if it is to others because not everybody has lived through that type of situation, you know, where you're like contending for the soul of people and they're mad at you, you know, they're cussing you out and think and calling you evil and calling you names and mocking, you know, lots of mocking. But then the second verse, I really like how it turned out, because it's not on the nose exactly, but it's pretty straight, you know, it's pretty straight laced. In violent surf, the fears will rise, so they hide their frightened eyes. That's what I feel like, you know, I saw in the, you know, in these, I don't know, in these interactions with those who had refused to believe was like, when things are tough, instead of turning to the Lord like a believer does, it's kind of like you get bitter, you get blind, you close your eyes, and the darkness drowns. But then, you know, speaking to the Lord, you're the one who walks along. So here's the contrast, you know, so it's like darkness is drowning some, but you're the one who walks along on the waves that are so strong, and you're the one that calls to me, come and see. And I had this image of like Peter stepping out on the waves, you know, like Jesus calls us to do things as we come toward the light, so to speak. And so it's like this contrast of people are sinking beneath the dark waves. But then there's others who are walking on the water with the Lord, you know. So great song or not, I like, you know, I like the sentiment in it. It feels meaningful to me. And then it says they don't want you, but they need you. And it never really turns the corner to being positive, you know, because in that time for me, I never really felt real positive. Like in the years where I was doing Questions from Atheists, I am not aware of a single atheist who turned and became a believer. It turned out that wasn't going to be maybe that was the fruit of that ministry and I don't know it. That's a possibility. But to my knowledge, that wasn't the fruit of that ministry. However, one fruit of that ministry was the many, many believers who gained confidence again. And we had comments about that relatively regularly in that time, that, you know, it was believers who had felt bombarded by like atheist memes and, you know, agnostic videos and, you know, that really militant, aggressive stuff that gets put out on the internet. And they felt, you know, they felt kind of overwhelmed. And so through this, I don't know, I think a number of people sort of found their confidence again. Originally, the person that, and I've talked about this and I think written about it, but originally the person that initiated Questions from Atheists was my brother, my older brother. He had been struggling with some doubts, and he had this kind of secret list of questions that he felt like were unanswered or unanswerable. A lot of them about Jesus, but other, you know, other things too. A lot were actually about Jesus. So he mentioned that to me at some point, and I said, "Well, give me the list. Let me see if we can find answers for them." Because I was like, I haven't done apologetics really, but I'll give it a shot for my brother, you know. And so I just started writing, and I would send him the answer, but then I would also post the answer on our blog. And so for some of them that I felt like were valuable, I would make videos. And so that's how it kind of began. And then at some point, he had this neat thing he said. He said, after, you know, we'd probably gone, we may have gone through all of his questions. I think there was probably 30 of them or something. At some point, he said, I don't remember all the answers that you've given, but I remember that there are answers. And I was kind of like, yeah, I think that maybe was the goal in the first place. It wasn't to have you memorize every single answer. It was just to show that this thing is reasonable. It's not ridiculous, you know. It's not wishful. It's not just wishful thinking. I mean, there is wishful thinking in it because we wish and hope for it to be true, obviously. But that doesn't mean it isn't true, you know. It's reasonable. That was the point. And so that's, I think, what he came away with was that it was a reasonable conclusion. It wasn't idiocy. And I haven't revisited with him in a long time about it. I should probably circle back around and, you know, ask, are there new questions or anything like that? But I think, you know, toward the end of that run, I think he at least was in a better place. And because of that, I felt like I could move on. And I really think that's mostly why I moved on, was because the thing that we set out to do, and I say we because he was involved in it too. He would sometimes have follow-up questions or have responses, but like the thing that we set out to do, I feel like we did. And so then I moved on. You know, some people who are like really great at building like an online platform probably would have said, no, you got to keep doing this now forever and just, you know, keep pounding it. But I was like, no, I think I did. I think I did what I could and kind of left this library of stuff. It still is out there and still gets views and people look at it. So that's the cool thing about this kind of deal, is that if you're making media, media continues to exist. So that's the song, and that's where it came from. Came from all of that. I think maybe now let's listen to it. Let's just see what we think. I saw a fish and fell right in. Overboard, now I'm drowning. You hop the rail and rescue me, and now I see. Another splash, he's drowning too. You dove back in to rescue, but your help he didn't want, and now he's gone. They don't want you, but they. Frightened eyes, the tide sprays all around, the darkness drowns. You're the one who walks along on the waves that are so strong. You're the one who calls to me, come and see. yeah. It still grooves. I like it. I like how it turned out. As you can tell, I wasn't born to be a singer, you know. I was born to do other things probably, but I had a shift in my thinking on my singing quality, and it was that when I started writing books, I realized that I have something to say, and there's people that will read it, there's people that will listen. I have audiobooks and stuff. And then I started to think, well, what if I just thought of it like there's some stories that are better told in music, you know? And so if I thought, like, what if I shift my thinking toward I'm just a singing storyteller, you know? I'm not the best singer, but I think I'm an okay storyteller. And in that, you know, in that vein, I kind of found my confidence. I mean, I've sung for people for years, but always known I was definitely not as good as others, but found some, you know, found that there were folks that thought what I was doing was worth doing. So yeah, I think it turned out good. A couple of musical notes on it. The small stringed instrument you hear at the beginning is a ukulele. I bought my wife a ukulele a year or two ago for Christmas when I realized that the previous ukulele we had been destroyed, I think, by one of the kids. So that happened to be sitting around the house. I was like, ooh, that'd be fun to have on there. And then I ordered a soprano trombone, and mostly for this song, because I was like, hey, I'm hearing like brass on this. I think it needs some brass. And for whatever reason, I thought I was just going to get that trombone in and be able to jam, man. I haven't played trombone. What do I know about trombone? You know, I haven't even ever played a horn, you know, and I got it in, and I took maybe 2 hours to get where I could play a really shaky F scale. And I was like, what am I going to do with an F scale? I can't even hold the notes. This isn't going to work. And so I abandoned the idea of putting horns on it, but I think it would have been cool. I think it would have fit really nice. I could have done MIDI horns, which is like digital, you know, but it just, something about MIDI horns is just like, nah, it doesn't. I think that's one of those things that still kind of needs to be real. Unless you're doing like large orchestral, you can kind of bury it in the mix and it can work. But like for an out front, jam band, you know, kind of like it just, I don't know. I just couldn't get something that I felt like was convincing. So also on this song, you know, I wrote it on piano. And so in the arrangement you just heard, you're hearing piano, ukulele, bass guitar, drums. What else? Oh, you're hearing bells. I think technically it's probably a Glockenspiel or some odd thing like that, but it's just like a bell set. I really like that high bell sound that cuts through and kind of feels sort of music box, kind of like a music box. So, and then some synth stuff in there too. So yeah, that is the song, The Deep. That's the opening track on the album. And that is the story behind it. I think we'll do some more of these. So I don't know that we'll do them consecutively. We've got another podcast coming up later this week with the guys, with Sean and Dane. So we'll probably do that before I get back to doing another one of these. But I'll plan to do another one of these next week. How about I play you out with the song one last time? Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
I saw a fish and fell right in. Overboard, now I'm drowning. You hopped the rail and rescued me, and now I see. Another splash, he's drowning too. You dove back in to rescue, but your help he didn't want, and now gone. the fears will rise. So they hide their frightened eyes. The tide sprays all around. And darkness drowns. You're the one who walks along on the waves that are so strong. You're the one who calls to me.
Bye.